Mr. Rayner Taylor, Reel 2. We were talking about your time working at the Durban Mill.
Yeah.
And you were telling me about the shop floor where you worked and the noise. What was the atmosphere like? Was it was the air clean inside, or did it get muddy?
Well, no. It was very, very... It was very, very warm. Very warm indeed. It was steam heated, of course. And in this area, you could stand in parts of the Uncarry count 350 cotton mill chimneys from one area of here. Nearly everyone worked in the cotton mill.
Was there much dust in the air, though?
There are certain branches of preparations were very dusty, so much so that after years and years, there was a disease was identified, and it became, well, it was a notifiable disease, and it was pensionable. It was called bisonosis. It affected the lungs. It affected mine, in fact. And of course, people became very ill. In fact, there's no cure for it. They die with it eventually.
What you carried on as a piecer, did you?
Yes, well, I progressed up the ladder up to the time I went into the army. By the time I went into the army, I was a big piecer, you see.
Was there a union?
Oh, yes.
In the Durban?
There was every mill had a union. Oh, yes, a very strong union.
Were you all in the same union?
You had to be in the union.
Which union was it?
Cotton the Spinners Union.
And what did that do for you?
Well, I often wondered that, what they did for us. If the cotton, if it wasn't producing like the operative thought it should, because you remember everyone was on piecework, you know, if it kept breaking down, if the threads kept breaking, simply because the cotton that was being used wasn't up to standard, then they'd bring the union in to complain about and have this put right. There's things like that, you know.
Were you much interested in the union? You were a young lad then.
No, I wasn't. No, no. I was in because I had to be, you know. We paid £4 a week, I think.
Were there any disputes, proper disputes, while you were there?
Odd ones. Yes, there was. I think there was a couple.
Did you have to go out on strike?
Oh, yes, yes.
When was that? Was it before the war?
Oh, yes, before the war.
Do you remember what it was about?
Oh, yes, because the mill owners wanted to reduce the wages. It was as easy as that.
Was the strike... How long did the strike go? Well,
there was one strike. It lasted a long, long time. It was very bad. And I'm told that during the time of the American Civil War, it really did upset them here because they couldn't get cotton.
But during the strike, you were in this strike, this long strike.
Oh, yes, right? Oh, yeah.
Did you suffer a lot during that?
I'm not conscious of it. We never had any money in any case. And I don't know about we spent our time, football and anything.
So it didn't make that much difference to you?
No, right? No, because my father was working, you see. But at that time... No,
and there were pickets and things, or was there no question of anyone going
no,
in?
No, nobody would go in, no. They didn't call them pickets. They used to have pickets to stop people from what they call knob-sticking. I don't know why they call it that.
What was that?
Knob-sticking. Anybody trying to break the strike, you know, going to work.
And did you win the strike, or...?
Well, like all strikes, it finished up with a compromise. No winners, a lot of losers, both sides. All the same.
So, was there anything else you remember about the factory?
Yes.
Before the war?
Yes, the knocker-up. Almost all areas had their own, what they called, private watch. And the families paid coppers a week. And every morning, a man came round at the time you wanted to be knocked up, as we call it, and he would come along with a long pole with pieces of wire whipped on the end, and he would knock on the bedroom window, and he would keep on knocking until you got up and looked through the blind on one side, and he would shout and tell you the time and what sort of a day it was. When you tap it with wires on a bedroom, you think you're coming through it, but you didn't. You just tap it. And he's your, it's 4:30, it's a cold morning. You see, this was the knocker up. And he was a common, nearly everybody had them. And they start work perhaps about 4 o'clock, these knockers up. And they were going to different places, knocking people every morning. That was before the time when everybody had an alarm clock. Because timekeeping was very, very important in a mill. Very important indeed. If you weren't in the mill before 6 o'clock, they closed the gates and you wasn't allowed in until after breakfast. So you used to call it, you were quartered. You lost that 2 hours. So it was important that you were not in time. Very important.
Did you have regular breaks while you were at work?
Start at 6 o'clock, and the engine would stop at 8. Well, you had your breakfast. No canteens, you had your breakfast.
You took it with you?
Oh, yes. And the...
What would you have for breakfast? What sort of
thing? Well, it varied. It varied. There was no such thing as bacon and egg things. You were looking bread and jam often enough. A banana. Raw onion. Anything. And the engine would then start at 8:30 till 12:30. And it's same at dinner time.
Were you allowed out of the factory at dinner time?
Oh, yes. The factory provided an oven where you could take your dinner and warm it in the oven, you know. Oh, I could do that. But you just sat down where you work. Just sat where you worked. There was no other facilities, none whatever. Quite primitive by today's standards.
Was there an afternoon break?
No, 1:30 till 5:30, no break.
So you had an hour for lunch?
An hour for lunch.
What about toilets?
Well, the toilets, at the end of each room was a set of toilets. By the time I went to the Durban, they were flush toilets. At the Twist, they were cans. No doors on the toilets. No. So there was nobody skiving. And you went in and did what you wanted to
Could
do.
You go when you liked?
Oh, yes.
The lack of doors stopped you from staying in?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Because we wouldn't allow smoking, you know.
Were you not allowed smoking in the
whole factory? Oh, no way at all. It was a cardinal sin to smoke.
Was that because of the risk of fire?
Risk of the fires, they're fearful when a fire broke out, because everything was saturated with oil, you know. Fearful the factory fires were.
Did you ever see a fire before?
Oh, I've seen several.
Before the war?
Oh, yes, I've seen all cotton mills burned out.
What about in your own mill?
Well, they had a system of... there was buckets everywhere. They were usually topped up, you know. Plenty of fires, but they were luckily smothered.
Were you not allowed to take smoking stuff into the mill?
Well, they didn't. You weren't searched or anything like that. But woe betide anybody that... you wouldn't need the officers or officials to be caught smoking. Your own work people wouldn't wear it, because the risk is so great, you know.
Was there anything else about life on the factory, you remember, before the war? First World War?
Well, there's quite a lot of... there's a facet of it was promotion. Now, it was always understood when a boy went to work at the mill, the date of his starting work, it was entered into a record book. Now, that stayed with him all the time he was there, and according to that book, depended his promotion. Mind you, they would promote him if he were no good, but you'd have to prove that he wasn't capable, but he had to have his chance. There was a classic story of one boy being promoted out of his turn, you see. And of course there was a scream from these other lads who should have been promoted, and they went to see the official, the gaffer as they call him. And they complained bitterly about this boy being promoted. And the official said, well, it's only for 6. I mean to say, the man who was only off, he was only off ill, and when he came back, this boy had come back, he's only off 6. And the question that was put to the officer, but what if it is? Now then, now that's a question. In plain easy, what if he dies? Are you going to put this fellow back if he dies? And that was a story, and it did happen to be true, it did happen. But it was used many times, that, where it is.
I don't know whether you could do this. Could you describe just what happened to the cotton from when it arrived to the mill to when it left? I mean, just fairly simply, I know it's complicated.
It arrived in England in bales. In the main, it was American cotton. American cotton was about middle grade. Egyptian was rather better, and Sea Island cotton. But these were specialists for specialist jobs. In the main, it was American cotton. And it was, the bales were opened, and they'd been compressed, tight as concrete blocks. And they were opened, and they were put into a breaking machine, which broke the raw cotton up. And
who would run that? Would that be men or boys or women?
Oh, men do that, yeah. The women would put the cotton onto the feeders, you know, but the men did the, and it churned it all up, and it turned it into on rollers. We call laps. The laps were then taken to another department, and they were put on a machine which drew the cotton into a sort of a thread. From that, it went to another machine which made the thread longer, and successive machines made them longer until it came to the spinning machine when you got the cotton thread, all of which had been processed from the raw cotton in the same mill, but with different departments. And of course, after you'd got the cotton threads on these bobbins, they were usually to the weaving sheds. Now, the weaving was principally done in the East Lancashire towns. Very few weaving sheds in Oldham, but they go to Burnley, Cole, and Accrington, places like
so
that.
So your job was at the end of this process where it had been drawn
yes,
out?
Yes, yes.
You were there when it was being put onto the bobbins?
Yes, yes.
Now, what now, you were trying to become a spinner. What was so skillful about the spinner's job?
Well, there was a machine that was a bit intricate, and you had to be able to judge whether it was doing it right. You had to know which wheels to put on to grade the thread, and a wide variety of things that you had to do. And whilst you could have learned it in much less time, but the opportunity for a job didn't exist, you see. You had to wait till somebody died.
Now, you went there when you were what was it, 13, yes, late 13, yes. That's 1911,
yeah.
And you were there when the war broke out.
Yeah.
Had you settled down to it? Were you enjoying your life in the factory?
I didn't know any other. I didn't know any other.
Did you find it monotonous? It's a long day.
It's a long day. No, not monotonous. Not monotonous.
Could you talk or would the noise stop?
Oh, yes. You could talk. You could talk in the spinning department. It was when you got into the weaving sheds when you couldn't talk, you know. I wouldn't say it was monotonous. No.
Now, you were only a young lad. Were you aware of that war was coming? Did you know anything about the international situation at all?
Strangely enough, I think before war broke out, we sensed it. Everybody sensed that eventually war would break out. Because the newspapers were full of the international situation, and always it seemed Germany was the aggressor. Naturally, they would say that, you know. And it was I don't think it was any great surprise. In fact, as I remember it, there was a sense of relief when war broke out. Now, that's a strange thing to say. Now, but it was, it's true.
Now, you were 16.
Yeah.
You probably didn't think you'd be involved in it.
Oh, no. No, I didn't. I didn't. But we were, even at that age, we were swept up by enthusiasm. It's hard to make anybody believe the enthusiasm that there was for war. It's hard. And I wouldn't blame anybody who said, I shoot the line. What I'm telling is true.
Did you think it would be a quick war?
Everybody thought it was a quick war. We were fed by the newspapers that it was going to be a quick war. On by Christmas.
So you thought you'd be a spectator from the...
Oh, yes. And I was annoyed. I was, along with all others of my age, I was annoyed to think I'm going to miss it. Because people joined as a sense of adventure and get a change, get away from it. It's difficult. It's very difficult to try and make anybody understand what the mental attitude of people were.
Now, were you tempted to join up underage?
Yes, everybody was. I had a brother, did it very early on, and the problem that we had at our house when he did it.
When did he join up?
He joined up in August.
Just immediately the war
started? Oh, yes, yes.
How old was he?
17. First of all, you must understand the attitude of the general public to the peacetime soldier. It wasn't good. Now, in Ashton-under-Lyne, where it was a garrison town, and the soldiers were principally noted for drunkenness and brawling at Saturday night. This is how soldiers' life was, that into bed or out of barracks in an afternoon. And my mother, were born in Ashton-under-Lyne, and she was brought up with a feeling of revulsion against soldiers. When one of her lads comes home and said he joined, I thought, my mother broke her heart. Ooh, dear, dear, dear. I can see her now, sat in the rocking chair, crying with her pity. I can see, and my dad talked him out of it. He said, you don't go like. You see, you could join up, and then you had to be sworn in. Well, he hadn't been sworn in, so he didn't.
And he was underage as
well?
He
was underage, yeah.
So he tried to. Did you try at all?
No, because conscription come in, I don't need to do it.
No, I mean, you didn't try in 90...
Oh, no, I was too free. Look, I only weighed about £90.
So you there'd have been no way they'd have believed
it. No. But the thought, and of course the newspapers showed us how well we were doing. And
hang on a minute. Do you remember the day war actually broke out itself? Because it was a bank holiday, wasn't it? August the 4th. Did anything strike you?
I don't want to confuse two wars, because I've seen them both. I think we were at Blackpool when war broke out the first time. I know we were at Morecambe the second time. I think so. And of course, we got home as quickly as we could. I think so.
But did anyone go up to the barracks? You were close to the barracks.
No, not that I know of.
The other thing is, was there any action or trouble with people with German names?
Well, I was just coming to it. There used to be two shops on the main road.
Which road?
Pork Butchers.
Which road?
On Manchester Road. That's the main road where you came up from Manchester. And, of course, the windows were broken there. Crowds shouted in front of the window, in front of them. These people left, you know.
Did you see that happen?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course I did.
Were you watching, or were you part of the crowd?
Oh, we weren't part of the crowd. We were watching, you know.
Did you approve of what happened?
Well, yes, because, everything that could be bad, we believed. Or could be said about the Germans, we believed. Propaganda. And it take away.
So you were part of, you were there watching the
crowd. Oh, yes.
And you approved of what was happening.
Oh, very much so.
But you didn't throw any stones or do
anything. Oh, no.
Why not? I mean,
I think we were too far away. The crowd was so great.
Were the actual people attacked at all? The owners?
I don't think the people were attacked. They just smashed the shop windows.
Was there any looting from the shop?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't say about that, you know.
Any other things you remember like that about the German?
No, except that if it were German, it were bad. It had to be bad if it were German.
Was that extended to everything?
Everything about Germans. There was nothing good. The only thing good about Germans were dead ones. That was what people thought, you know.
But did it apply to things that are thought of as German, like sausages or dashes?
Oh, yes. And previous to the war, Germany was... they were great at manufacturing these mechanical toys. Miniature railways that you wound up. And the mark, it was... It's strange, I should remember this. DRGM. And we always said that meant damn rotten German make. That's what we used to say. But invariably, they were made in Germany, these tin things. I notice now they're in such demand that a good one sells for hundreds of pounds, a toy buzz or something like that.
Now, when the war broke out, a lot of people joined up. Did that affect...
Yes.
The life in the factory?
Very much so.
Could you tell me how?
Well, promotion became much easier because the top people were mature and they were the right age. And the middle people were in their late teens or early 20s. So they were ripe. They were ripe for joining up. And having been fed with this propaganda of an early finish, it was a great change. It was a change for them. And they joined up in droves.
This is in August and September, isn't
yes,
it?
And so much so. Before mobilisation became really organised, the recruiting offices were overwhelmed. They couldn't handle the volunteers. They couldn't handle them. At the bottom of this road here, right opposite where you turn up here.
Opposite Hollins Road.
Yes.
The road.
There was a shop there. and it was empty, a big shop. And they turned it into a recruiting office. And I have actually seen the traffic stopped on the main road. Mind you, traffic wasn't like it is today. There were trams and horses. So many people trying to enlist that it stopped the traffic. And they closed the doors. They couldn't handle the number of people who wanted to volunteer. Now, it seems strange in these days, but I saw that. I've seen that happen here.
And when was that?
This was 1914.
Right at the start. Now, surely, if they were joining up on that scale, it wasn't only easier promotion. Didn't you get a bit short of people to work
with? Oh, very much so. But, by the same process, orders became less. Because countries and places where they sold their cotton goods to, they were all at war. And they weren't buying. So it meant a lot of these people, they had to stop a lot of the machinery. So in one way, it was a good thing.
So although a lot of the men went away, there were less machines being used.
Less machines being used until the demand came for uniforms. Uniforms and all the things, cotton, that's used in connection with an army.
When did these orders start coming
in? Well, they start coming in as the supply ministries got on underway. But it takes quite a while for this to get through. And in the meantime, there was quite a lot of what went on a short time.
So you were actually on short time?
Well, yes, probably. Yes.
So it wasn't a matter of bringing in new people at that stage?
Oh, no, there were no new people. They were all joining the army.
Now, what about when you got these orders? What was it for actual khaki cloth? I mean, cotton to go into khaki?
Well, it depended what type of cotton you were spinning. It depended a lot on that, you know. Yes, because there was various kinds of uniforms.
Oh. And what were the orders that the Durban mill were getting? What type of cotton was the army wanting from the Durban?
Well, I couldn't say that because it's quite a bit rather out of our. We said they got order for such a thing, and that was the end of the story as far as we were concerned, you know.
So, when you got the orders, how did you cope with the lack of people? When you had to set the machines back on again, did you cope?
Well, they was as best they could. As best they could. There was no such thing. There were no overtime, because you were doing 10 hours a day then, you know. 10 hours a day was the normal day's work, you know.
Oh, yeah. Did they set any new people on when the orders came?
Anybody. Anybody could have a job. Anybody.
Did that mean the standard of workmanship
went down? Oh, yes. Went down, yes.
Was that noticeable?
Oh, yes. Very noticeable.
How would you tell? I mean, what would...
Well, in my own department. The machines wouldn't run as they should do. They were fed like they should be. And a general deterioration in the quality of work which were performed.
So both maintenance work on the machines and the actual spinning.
It did decrease. There's no doubt about that.